Welcome back to another episode of Intentional Partnerships. Today, we are really excited. We have been talking with a lot of guests from different organizations and schools. So today, we're really excited to bring you a couple of people who are parents and who are here to talk to us about what it means to be a family engaging with those different spaces that we've been talking to. So today, we have with us Christy and Ed, who are parents to three wonderful children that we will let them share with you about them. But Christy, I just do want to give a heads up. Christy is a coworker of mine here at Parents as Teachers, and so is very informed in this world, but also more importantly is a parent. And so today is really going to be stepping back and talking to us, not from the role of a professional, but as her role with her experiences as a parent.
Well, and I think it's important because we do want to get that perspective of a parent, but like you said, she also has a different skill set than some of our parents. And so I think it's going to be a great conversation, and we're so glad you guys could join us.
Welcome again, Christy and Ed. So if you guys just want to kind of introduce yourselves and just tell us a little bit about who you are and who your family is.
You want to go first, Ed?
Go ahead.
Ed and I started our family back in 2000, the year 2000. We had our first son, Will, and we referred to him lovingly as Will the Thrill. And he was our first son, and we had a lot of expectations with any first-time parents. He was diagnosed with autism when he was 5 years old. So that's kind of the reason I came to you, is that I think it's important to get that perspective of a parent that has a child that is not as typical and is not meeting those expectations of a first-time parent. We also have Griffin, who came 2 years later. So he's our second son. And then we have a daughter who came many years later. So now they are 17, 15, and 7. So that's us.
And yeah, I'm Ed. And
So they're your kids and her kids, right? So
that's what they tell me.
Okay, yeah. Let's talk about that, like the first child you talk about. Barry Brazelton always talked about the kid that you dream of and then the kid that you have. Every new parent particularly has expectations. As you have the first child, the second child, the third child, you know, where are you with those and where have you been and what's been the challenges of that, of those expectations?
When you start off having kids, I mean, you just look at the normal way of things should be, and then you see your friends going through their normal routines with their kids who are just almost the same age. And okay, wait a second, there's a little bit of a hiccup here. Now we're falling behind in the routines and the development and things like that. Then it's like, okay, well, we can't do that with our friends anymore because we're not at that level. So then you start not doing things with your friends. You actually start losing friends because your kid is not up to speed with their kid. That was the big change for me, or something that I didn't foresee. Mm-hmm.
So there's a social aspect to it as well as the parenting aspect.
Definitely.
So you start to kind of, your social life changes, and then you start to, I imagine, as I haven't gone through this yet, but I imagine you start to have this other side of life also that you can't connect with friends either because you're now involved in all of these other services and organizations, and what that looks like that's different than your friends with typically developing kiddos who aren't in, or did you guys do early intervention type?
Yeah. We did. Because of my background, I was really a tough cookie to engage because really, asking for help when you have the background that I did in early childhood, asking for help is sort of like failing in a way. I thought I had all these strategies and I thought I had all the answers, and all of them are failing miserably. Then you just, you know, have to ask for help. So getting into those services and learning to learn that whole world was very different than what my expectations were as a new mom.
I think that's a really important thing to talk about, is that feeling of failure, because mm-hmm. I don't think you're alone in that. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of parents, whether they have typically developing children or not, the first time you have to walk in and say, I need help with something that we as a society kind of have said, you just know how to do. Mm-hmm. Ed, when you think about your early days engaging with school and preschool and early intervention and all of those things, what were the challenges or successes in that for you?
He seemed to develop physically. You know, he liked to play and he liked to do sporty things and things like that. So that was neat. He wasn't totally offbeat as far as that's concerned. Pretty normal, I guess, for me to take him places as far as take him to school and drop him off with the teachers. Then, you know, you have specific instructions for the teachers because they're not, at that time, it just seemed like nobody was equipped to handle him and the needs that he needed. So you always had a big list of instructions that you had to go over with each teacher you dropped him off at, either at school or church or, you know, some daycare or what. But and then they'd look at you in a kind of a panicky manner. At first it would upset you, but then you got used to it. It got to be kind of fun just seeing people panic a little bit and say, here you go.
He's all yours. I'll be back in an hour. I'll be back at the end of the day.
Yeah, that was different for me because I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed at his behavior. He was the kid that was getting kicked out of classrooms. He was the child that was in timeout when I would pick up. And that was a direct reflection of me. A lot of our, you know, we were just, the instructions and the things that we would leave with people probably overkill, but necessary because I just didn't want to anybody to misinterpret his behavior, and I didn't want him punished. And so I just felt like it was really necessary.
Your attitude changes when you're younger, in your 20s, and then we're in our mid 40s, and we could really care less what anybody thinks anymore, because it really gets you nowhere.
Yeah,
it's just not needed.
Well, and talk about that transition, because between mom and dad, and then also, like you said, your development as a parent. So you have this idea of what your child's going to be, then you find out it's going to be different. And then there's, you're talking about social pressure from friends or social challenges. It's easy for parents to sit on the other side and go embarrassed. Yeah, no, your kids are a direct reflection of you, even though they shouldn't be, you know. And we can sit here and say, you know, that's a behavior that your child's dealing with, and it doesn't reflect on how you're doing it, but that's how you feel, and that's how it feels from other people. Mm-hmm. With our idea of respect, what were some of the things that people did right? You know, when they were interacting with you, you're giving instructions, or they have had to separate your child, you know, for good or bad, maybe for the right reason, maybe for the, you know, wrong reason. You could always challenge those actions, but where did people do it right? But what were some of the people, or what did they do that made it better? What were the things that people did that were respectful for you guys? What worked?
You know, if you dropped him off somewhere, he was just treated as a normal kid, you know, and you dropped him off and they're like, okay, no worries. Hey, he's got this he needs. They're like, okay, we got it covered. It's just the normalcy, I guess, of the people we would run into.
You know, with my embarrassment of dropping him off and not wanting him to misbehave, my attitude back then, and that's the same as Ed said, we were new parents, I didn't want to inconvenience anyone. And so that's why all those instructions came, and this is the best way to deal with the blow. I think when the diagnosis we were given, not even before the diagnosis, when he went into early childhood and he had just these number of things like speech, language, all these things that we didn't call autism back then. They were just things that we were helping him with. We got into a system of people that loved what they did. And I didn't realize that existed because here I am. It's hard when you don't like your own child. And that's where we were when Will went into early childhood. Will would wake up tantruming. You would wake up in the morning and hear him screaming in there and think, oh my God, what, you know, what is this day going to be like? So when you get into not enjoying being around your own child and then giving him to someone all day, that was a difficult transition, but these people, they loved him. They loved him. And that was a huge relief. And when we found a church that, I remember it was time to sign him up for VBS. And I said, oh, I'm not going to sign Will up. And this lady looked at me and said, you sign him up. We want him to come. And we started bringing him. And that's a huge thing for a parent who is carrying around this burden of, I don't want to drop him off with anybody because I don't want to inconvenience them, but I don't want him to be miserable either. But we just moved into the system of people that loved him. the therapists, the people that cared for him. So that was a huge difference.
Yeah. And people, it sounds like, you know, talking about people who respect your kid, mm-hmm. I mean, like mm-hmm. demonstrating they respect you through that. There's a lot of power in that.
Yeah. And I learned to respect them. I thought, why in the heck would you choose this as a profession to work with this child? But I mean, they're there and they're still there. It's really a cool thing.
So I know your introduction to all of these systems was with Will because he's your first kiddo. Mm-hmm. And then you've now had two other kids since then who you've also been introduced to systems in different ways. Has there been a difference in how you engage with different, like with school or different people based on each kid?
It changes just like every parent who has multiple children. The nice thing about actually being involved with the IEP process and learning how not only Will has individual needs and ways that he learns best, you start to identify that with each child, even if they, you know, don't have an IEP, you start to advocate in a way for each of your children when you go through that process. But like every parent, my second one, I was engaged a little less. And the third one, now that we're in our 40s, we kind of pass the torch on to those first time moms that, you know, or, yeah. you know, all that. But that's definitely changed. Engagement has changed with each child, with mm-hmm. the systems.
Do you feel like you have to engage less because it's less?
I feel like I can engage less because I trust and, like you mm-hmm. said, respect. I respect that people in early childhood and in education, there's a few of them that probably are burnt out and end of their life in that career, or maybe they need to grow in a different way in early mm-hmm. childhood, and maybe it's not in the classroom. But for the most part, people that are in it for a long time, I respect that they know what they're doing and they love kids. I think new educators coming into the field that have no idea, they just love kids. So they go into this, they've got a lot of surprises, not only with new kids diagnosed, but the toxic stress and the things that we're dealing with now, they may realize very quickly that this is not an industry for them. And by God, get out of it. You know what I mean? Don't waste your time. Because it's just damaging.
It's hard. When we've talked a lot in larger system levels about the idea of how, you know, teachers often teach because they want to work with kids. And we don't do a great job yet. There are a lot of things moving to work towards that way of training teachers better, that mm-hmm. you're not here to work with kids. You're here to work with families because a kid is a part of a family.
Right.
And so what does that look like to actually support this whole system instead of just this kiddo as they mm-hmm. move through?
So important.
Well, and let me ask you about that as we talk about respect. You know, like you said, when you found someone respecting you as a parent that had input and respecting your child as a child that had challenges or disabilities or just different, you know, not knowing your child, but, you know, there's times when you want to say, you know, this kid's got some giftedness that come with the challenges. And then some parents are like, you have no idea. We can see the giftedness, but it is mm-hmm. not rosy because there are tantrums and there are just all the things that make it a real challenge. You know, I mean, we could all, those of us that go home at night could talk all day about giftedness, except for the fact that we're not raising mm-hmm. that child. When you got that respect and you saw your child getting that respect, it helps you work together. But talk to me about, were there times when, not necessarily disrespect, but when everybody kind of takes ownership of the child. One of the challenges, the teachers think it ought to be this way. And yet the parent is the mm-hmm. expert and they think it ought to be a way. And so what were those challenges of not just disagreeing maybe on treatment or care, but also on people taking ownership of your kid or their care? Did you see that? Because that's a different kind of respect or disrespect as well.
And I think that the level of respect that you have for each other is, it has to be mutual. I have to respect that you are going to love my child and you're going to advocate for his needs and educate him how you can educate him. And you have to respect that I'm doing the best I can as a parent. I have had differences of opinions with educators, with Will, and a lot of it doesn't have to do with methods because I trust the methods out there. If they're using research-based methods, I'm willing for educators to try anything because I trust that they're doing their job and they're going to do the best they can. But it's sometimes the personality conflicts that happen. And I know when you don't like my kid. I know that. And parents know that. You cannot fake that. You will be able to know when there's a personality conflict there.
I think that's the thing. And like you said, you know, I'm an old principal. And so when we talk about personality conflicts, that's the first thing somebody would throw out that wanted out of the relationship. It's exactly what you're talking about is I struggle with this kid. Or like you said, there were days you didn't like your kid. And we have to, I think that's respect we have to show to parents of, I can love my kid and not like living with this dude right now. You know, and these are real challenges. And I think that's part of that respect. But also back to the teacher, it's like, I need you to teach my kid. And at the same time, of course, I was a middle school principal. So none of us like the kids most of the time. We kind of had a mutual agreement of, I don't like your kid and you don't like your kid, but we all got to raise them. So, you know, and I think that's true with a kid with disabilities. Like, yes, we love this kid and we have empathy and or sympathy. But part of that respect is it's not easy to like you. It's not easy to like me. It's not easy to like this kid. But we all have a job to do. And I don't think you're talking circles at all. I think that's a real deal. And what were some of the practices that you saw put in place that just helped you as a parent, that just put you at ease and gave you that trust in them in the system? What were things that people would do specifically to help you?
Just constant communication is one way. I think having a good team at the table, as far as your IEP team, to going back to the teacher that you know they're not going to get along. Education-wise, you may have a year where you don't make very much gain because of that personality conflict, which is really, really hard to accept. But you've got other people on that team finding the champions for your kid at the table that are going to advocate with you and for you. Maybe it's other areas that they grow in that year. But I've found that you can't mess up that relationship with your school. And if there's a personality conflict with the teacher, that can happen very easily.
When I think too, when you talk about that relationship, that's when you talk about moving through systems too, right? It might be finding that one person that might not be a teacher, but is somebody outside of the teacher who's in that team that moves forward with you, or thinking about the people who pull you in when you're not sure, that help guide along that process. Have there been people like that for you that have guided you along that process when you weren't, you know, we talk a lot about parents having to take initiative, to engage themselves. But there also is, you know, there's a responsibility on the school side to reach out to parents, or not only school, but early intervention or healthcare, whatever it is. As professionals, I think there's an obligation to reach out that we don't always fulfill as well as we could. But have there been people that you've noticed, or times that people have like kind of pulled you along when maybe you weren't sure or were hesitant to engage where you thought maybe?
I mean, I tend to think of those champions at the table. Most of the time, those champions were Will's paraprofessionals, or those people that were with him all the time, that weren't invited to IEP meetings, which was so weird to me because they're the person that was with that. So I would like request those people be at the table, which you can as a parent do that. You can request whoever you want to be part of your team, including them. They respected that I asked them to be in that discussion. But they, Will's paraprofessionals, there's been a few that didn't like him, and I knew that. But for the most part, we've had some wonderful, wonderful people that have worked with him. The people that are with him the most have been the ones that I've been able to connect with around just helping me with day-to-day things. Yeah. Because they're dealing with the day-to-day things and trying to get him to succeed.
Right.
Now that he's older, there's more people that are in the picture now. Because now it doesn't have to do with, because he has an intellectual disability as well. So in many ways, he's plateaued educationally. There's some things he will still continue to learn. But, you know, for the most part, he's where he's going to want to be. So we have to look at other areas like how he's going to connect with the outside world. And so we have people in our circle that take him out and take him to the movies and take him to do social things. And these 20-somethings that work with him at Teen Club that love him. I mean, I have such a respect for the millennials of our, you know, some people don't respect them, you know, but to me, they're a wonderful group of kids that he calls his staff, right? He thinks he has the staff posse around him that are continuously helping. But these people are people that take him out socially and get him networking with other kids his age and go to, I'm just thinking of all the other people now that we're connected with that don't have to do with education anymore. We got to get them out of our house. Yeah. You know what I mean? We got to get him living an independent life, as independent as he wants it to be. So it's a whole new world, whole new system, basically, that we're looking at now.
Yeah, absolutely. And part, you know, we talk about partnering with people, and that looks totally different as you're now, like, you dealt with a couple transitions through life, and now you're going into this next big one of what is it? What does it look like to be an adult? You know, we talked about this the other day, is what does it look like to engage with a system when your kid is seen as an adult by the outside world, but still needs you as a parent to engage with?
And one that looks very typical on the outside and is very, you know, we talk about high functioning, low functioning, which is not a category I like to go, but, you know, he's looks high functioning, and I get that a lot. Oh, he must be high functioning. Well, no, he's not actually, but thanks for asking. He's going to need a lot of help. He's going to need a team of people around him for a long time, but he doesn't look like he needs the help. So, and we talked about this also, that Will was diagnosed, you know, our babies are diagnosed with things, but it's really the family that's diagnosed. We have to get our, you know, we talked about this new system that we're going into now. I feel like I have my feet under me, where when we were diagnosed originally, my feet were kind of kicked out from under me, and I'm taking him to therapists and doctors and trying to cure him and trying the latest, you know, and now it's all about this is who he is and this is where we're going now. And it feels like a better plan than back then.
Yeah.
Man, what a mess.
But that's really important too, I think, for practitioners to think about and teachers and all of those people is like, you know, you talk about the things that are happening within school, and we've kind of talked about that partnership, but to recognize all of these other things that are happening outside of their walls that that families can use support with. And maybe when families aren't showing up to things, it might be because they've got other doctor's appointments or other things. Like, what is this whole other world that this kid is and this family are living that's not within your walls?
And providers need to realize that there's a whole grieving process and cycle that everybody in the family will or will not go through, and at different times. They just may not accept the help. They may not want the help. You may not be part of this family's success story because they're not ready for that yet. And it's taken us 17 years to really feel like, okay, this is looking good. You know, well, maybe not 17, you know, but things have really calmed down.
Yeah. If you could, or if you have any message or one last kind of message that you would like to give to not necessarily their families, but people who are working with families on what it means to actually respect and partner with you as a parent, just kind of any last thoughts on that?
Working with having a child with a disability, but also working with children with disability or people with disabilities, putting yourself in that position helps you to gain a lot of perspective. Like, if you haven't done it before, I would encourage you to volunteer and try it and see how you feel, because some people just didn't expect to be gifted at it and they are just wonderful. So I would encourage people to just try it, just try to be around it as much as they can. And also to understand that there's lots of varying abilities to everyone that you don't see on the outside. And we're all kind of battling our own things, whether they be a disability or who knows what people are battling. So I think when you have a child with a disability, that gives you that perspective that everyone that I deal with on a day-to-day basis may be battling something. And so it's a whole new look on life. And we're grateful. We're grateful for that experience. That's one thing that's really changed our lives.
Well, it sounds like, you know, over the course of all of your time, you've had a lot of really awesome experiences and great people and others who have helped you along the way and who you have put yourself in places where you're helping your kids in a lot of ways. I know that they appreciate that. And as educators appreciate that as well, as families, you know, come in to support their kiddos in every way that they can and really truly partner with in that process, because that it make a big difference. So thank you both for taking the time today to chat with us. We are super excited to get the parent perspective out there, because all too often we only talk to other professionals instead of stopping and taking the time to listen to what parents have to say. So until next time, this is Lindsay and Mike, and we will see you in the next episode.
Thanks for everything you're doing.
All right. Thank you, guys.
This podcast has been a collaboration between Parents as Teachers National Center and Strong Fathers, Strong Families, LLC. To learn more, visit us at either www.parentsasteachers.org or www.strongfathers.com. You can also find us on Twitter or Facebook